Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. What up? Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are. Thank you for listening and continuing to listen on our saga with God Bless the Girls. Today we got 47 chapters, 47, 48, 49, and 50. I think we're going to do three chapters today on God Bless the Girls. So the last time I spoke with you guys, or Sarah spoke to you guys, she was rehashing over her situation with the girls. She had finally got to the point where she was ready and the girls were all ready to meet up with each other after they're captured for the first time in years seeing each other. Since then, Sarah has went off to college, graduated, decided to get with Mark, her friend from high school, who she wasn't interested in back in the day. Married him, moved locations from Galveston to San Antonio, and she had a little secret, right? Sarah had a secret in which she was actually receiving letters from Gore and reading them. Pretty crazy when you think about what he did to her and the rest of the girls. And it was a sense of shame and guilt that she was doing that. So she was going to bare her heart and hang out with the girls in Denver, Colorado at this Winter Wonderland hotel. And she was going to tell the girls of her secret. But she was kind of going there to blame it on Boston, which it should be, because Boston was the one that was telling Gore of her situation. That's how he knew all the so much information on Sarah being in jail. So she was going there with the notion of thinking that, oh, you know, yes, I'm going to tell them that I was receiving letters from Gore, but let me show you this and show them that Boston was the one that helped him in that situation. But as you heard last week, Boston actually blames it on Sarah. And not only that, tells the girls that Sarah is in love with Gore, which is absolutely fucking crazy. But Sarah didn't know how to deal with it. She wasn't expecting Boston to confront the girls in that fashion. And Sarah bolted. She got the fuck out of there. She ran out of that hotel, ran out of that restaurant, and went jetting down the street. And it took her on a long run for her to realize that, you know, subconsciously she already knew, but Boston was the person that was at fault for all of this. And she decided to go back to the hotel, tell the girls what was going on, and she was going to have to eat shit because Terry and Susie, who were her friends, trusted her. So she knew she was going to have to do that, but she had to get it off her chest and she had to do what she had to do. When she went back there, obviously, Susie and Terry were not happy with the situation and they gave her a lot of crap for her stuff, and they did her a really, really bad disservice. Not only did she had to come clean to them, Boston came clean for her, but while she's over here in Denver, far away from her husband, Terry and Susie took it upon themselves to get some revenge on Sarah for not being honest with them, and they told Mark of the situation. Now, Sarah is going apeshit and she's not knowing that, you know, now that Mark knows the situation, she doesn't know if she's coming home and she's going to have divorce papers waiting for her. Because, you know what I mean? Who wants to hear that their wife is speaking to not only another man, but in the fashion of how she's listening to the stories and these letters and stuff like that? Who wants to? And then just the creepiness of it being a person that, you know, had all intentions on raping and killing you. Why the fuck would you be accepting their letters from jail? So that's where we left off. Sarah had left all the letters with the girls. She had brought the letters with her from Gore. She had brought the letters with her to Denver, and she had left it in the girls' place. And she went back home to sleep it off and call Mark and see what was going to happen. So we're going to start off there. We're going to start out here in chapter 47 of God Bless the Girls. As you know, everything on the Dialogue Heavy podcast thus far is written and recited and recorded by yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. So without further ado, I bring to you chapters 47, 48, 49, and possibly 50 of God Bless the Girls. Here we go. Chapter 47. I had spent all that night trying to talk Mark off the ledge while simultaneously trying to change my flight to the next morning, which was damn near impossible. I told the lady at the airline that if I had to be in the luggage department, I was leaving that fucking snow-ridden state. And as luck would have it, there was a last-second cancellation on a flight leaving from a different airport from which I flew in from, in a different town an hour away. I would have to leave early the next morning, so when I had heard the knock at my hotel room door as I was packing, I figured it was just the bellsman coming up to help me with my luggage. I opened up the door and walked away to grab the last of my things. "Be with you in a second," I said. That's when I heard Terry speak in a much less hostile tone from the night previous. "Look, we're still mad at you, but I guess we understand." I turned around to see both Susie and Terry walking in my doorway. And in all honesty, once Susie closed the door and the girls were inside, I wasn't sure if they still wanted to beat my ass. But at that point, I was willing to exert some pent-up energy, even if it was 2-on-1. "He's sick for sure," Terry said as she came over and sat on my bed next to my suitcase. "Yeah," Susie said. "He has some type of fascination with you, doesn't he?" "Why, though?" "I don't know," I said as I continued to pack. "I've never written them back. He shouldn't even be sure that I've read them." "How does he know so much about you?" Susie asked. "Boston," I said. "Yes, I thought that too," said Terry. "But if he likes him so much, why would she do all that work for him if he's clearly in love with you?" "Who knows?" I said. "Charles Manson had over 1,000 marriage proposals after he did what he did. And that was what I was going to ask her last night, but she beat me to it with that daytime soap opera that she performed in the restaurant." "Yeah," Terry said. "Even with the letters, though, I wasn't really buying that you didn't write back until he said, 'I know you're out there and I'm going to see you again soon.' What the hell is wrong with him? Does he really think that you would actually go and visit him?" "Well, he's delusional, so maybe so," I said. "He has a hard-on for Mark, too," Susie said. "I can sense that through the paper." "I can see it," says Terry. "In his head, Mark took out his parents, and if Boston is telling him everything about what you've been up to, then Mark has his girl, too. He's got a legitimate beef." "Fuck him," I said. "I need to get home to Mark and apologize until our 13th wedding anniversary." Terry looked at me packing. "Wait, are you leaving now?" "Yeah. My husband, God bless him, has been through enough with this shit. He finally thought this whole thing was in the rearview mirror. And then I threw my last dress in my suitcase and zipped it up." "Yeah," Terry said. "I'm sorry about that. We were just so pissed last night." "Yeah, me too," I said. "And about not telling you two as well. I thought the letters would stop after a while, and definitely when we moved to San Antonio, but Boston made sure that didn't happen. Have you guys talked to her yet?" Terry shook her head. "Nah, she beat you to that as well." "What do you mean?" I said. "After we read your letters about 100 times, we went to her room to confront her." "I was going to do more than that," Susie said with a sarcastic smirk on her face. "And what happened?" I said. "She didn't answer. We figured she was ignoring us or whatever, so we went back to our room. But we called the front desk this morning and they told us she had checked out last night." Right then, my old friend from the basement crept up my spine and I knew yet again that something wasn't right. "Last night?" I said. "She checked out last night." "Yep, at 11 or so." "Wait," I said. "Terry, which one of you guys picked Denver anyway?" "Well, we all decided no," said Susie. "No, not really," Terry said. "It was Boston who shoved this place down my throat. And after going back and forth with her about it for so long, I just relented so I can see you guys. I wanted to go somewhere hot. Besides, it's damn near impossible to get flights in and out of here during this time of year." "So," Susie said, "you're telling me I almost gave up on getting a flight at all." No. "You're telling me," said Susie, "I almost gave up on getting the flight at all. The tickets were like triple the price." "Yeah, that too. But why?" I said. "Or why?" Terry said. "Sorry, guys. The Winter Olympics are here this week. And with these blizzards, half the flights are getting delayed and canceled. I kept telling Boston, why don't we go to another place or at least reschedule for a different time of the year? But she kept on all about the cute boy athletes we can meet up with and all the activities they do and places to go and blah, 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 blah. But it was all going down this weekend. It had to be this weekend. Bitch, I said as I grabbed my things and headed for the door. What? Both the girls said at once. She didn't want to reconnect with us. Terry, in all these years that we've been trying to get together, why didn't it happen? Boston, I guess. She always has some excuse or says she wasn't ready or whatever. Right, I said. As you just said, all of a sudden she's in a rush for us to go to some remote place that's cold and hard to get out of? Yeah, but, Terry said, I interrupted her. And she checked out, but we all know all the hotels in this town or anywhere else for 100 miles are booked because of the Olympics. Yeah, and, Susie said, so she only could have checked out to leave town. She only could have checked out to leave town, which means she already had her flight booked in advance to leave last night. All right, I'll buy all of that, but why would she want to come? I'm sorry, guys, hold on a sec. All right. I'll buy all of that. But why would she want to come here and then leave us just like that? She surely didn't come here to stick it to you in front of us. No, I said. She used you two to lure me away from Texas. For what? Susie said. So she can get to Mark. Chapter 48. In the past, Mark never missed a phone call from me. Like, ever. Even now that he was working, Mark couldn't take every call, but like clockwork, within 2 minutes, he always called or text back and check in with me and make sure everything was okay. That morning, he would do neither, and his reasoning would be life-altering. Naturally, on my way to the airport and before we hit the country roadside, my driver caught every red light or traffic incident in a 50-mile radius, and I wanted to choke the hell out of him every time he stopped short when he clearly didn't need to. The weather was so horrendous that my driver could probably only see 30 to 40 feet in front of his car, so when I was finally dropped off at the airport, I gave him a nice tip before slamming the door and gunning it for my gate. During the whole time I waited to board and on the plane before we took off, I called Mark and my parents, and no one had answered their phones. That scared the living daylights out of me. I was rattled with so much anxiety that I went to pee at least 10 times on that flight, which I'm sure didn't make the passenger in the aisle seat a big burly redhead with a nine-month-old baby girl in her lap super happy. When I landed, I was the rude passenger that doesn't wait their turn when the seatbelt light goes off. Everyone was pulling their luggage from the overcarriage, and I squeezed past the mother and child, pulled my bag down, and bolted for the front of the plane. Even in front of first class, I simply just didn't care about anybody else's feelings. By the time I turned my phone on in the airport to call a Lyft, I had missed calls from Mark, Terry, Susie, and my mom. I was so relieved to see Mark's call that I didn't even listen to any of the voicemails. I just called, "Baby, are you okay? I'm on my way home." "Hey, honey," a man's voice said calmly and smooth. But it wasn't Mark. "Welcome home." "Mark is a little, tied up right now, but we'll see you when you get here." "Who is this?" I said rhetorically, praying the air pressure from the flight was messing with my ears. "I'll give you 3 guesses." "Gore? Where is he?" Gore interrupted me. "It's Jerry now. Just Jerry. I decided to fully embrace my father's name ever since you and your husband took him away from me." "And Mark? Oh, don't worry. He's close by waiting for his beautiful wife to come home and make things right." "Right? Yeah. You and the scum you call a husband are going to pay for what you did to me and my family." Jerry. "I don't owe you anything, neither does Mark." "Oh, is that right? Shame. I really feel different. I really feel differently." I heard the sound of something igniting, then an excruciating scream in the background. "Ah!" All right, I said, I'm coming. Oh, I'm quite sure you are, Jerry said before I heard Boston's voice faintly in the background, and involuntarily my free hand gripped into a fist. Oh, yes, and hey, make sure that you go nowhere or tell anybody what you're doing. Of course, I'm tracking your phone from Mark's. For if you do not do exactly what is instructed of you, when you arrive home, there will be nothing here but Mark's lifeless, mangled body, and I will be out there, somewhere in the dark, waiting for my next chance to have you. Jerry hung up. Shit! I said, what the fuck am I going to do now? And I hadn't even realized that I'd been saying that aloud until my driver looked back at me through the rearview mirror. Is everything okay? The older Asian man said through a nervous smile. I gave my best fake smile I could muster. Fine, thank you. I would be home in 35 minutes, and my fate would be there waiting for me. Then I thought to myself, wait, how could this have possibly even happened? I went on the internet and fished up a few things. It turned out, with help from Boston, Jerry was the newest inductee of America's Most Wanted, an old television show and now a website that tracks down the most notorious and sought-after criminals. The two were on the run after Boston broke Jerry out of prison in a relatively easy fashion. They used the same bathroom scheme and method that Jerry and his family used to capture girls in the past, but this time, they laid their master plan down on, let's say, a less-than-smart correctional officer. It was years in the making, it turns out, that Boston had been building a relationship with a correctional officer by the name of Jeffrey Smith while visiting Jerry. Mr. Smith was a lonely, widowed correctional officer that was balding and overweight, so when a young and relatively attractive young woman like Boston showed him an inkling of interest, he jumped on the opportunity to spend time with her. On their dates outside the prison, she told him about Jerry, her baby brother, as his loss and his lost soul, and how they were brought up by horrible parents who beat them and sent them to bed at night without dinner. During their conversations, Mr. Smith would pretend to feel bad for Boston and Jerry and show interest in exchange for cheap thrills, sneaking his fat little grubby hands under the table and rubbing on Boston's leg. Of course, Boston was grossed out, but she stayed focused to the task, masterminded by Jerry Jr. When Jerry Smith wanted to take things to the next level as far as intimacy, Boston would claim that she wanted him just as bad as he wanted her, but because she had gotten her heart broken so many times before, and she cared about Mr. Smith so much, she would do this relationship right and wait until marriage. She would tease and touch the old man just to keep him on the hook, which in turn made him intensely infatuated with her. Then the day came that Boston saw the photos on, and then one faithful day, the day came when Boston saw the photos of my wedding that I specifically told my mother not to post on Facebook. And when this knowledge got back to Jerry, he apparently got so angry that he ripped his cell to shreds. And when his cellmate had something to say about it, he obliterated him as well. That got him put into solitary confinement for 3 months. And on her first visit after he served his time, he told her it was time for them to exact their revenge on Mark and I. Boston would have to move quick to serve her master. Mr. Smith worked the visiting room, and the day of the escape, when she signed in, she placed a note in Mr. Smith's uniform pocket stating that she couldn't take not being intimate with him anymore, and she wanted to submit her body to him in the visitor's bathroom in 5 minutes. Unfortunately for Mr. Smith, when he arrived in said bathroom on his next break, it was Jerry, not Boston, waiting in there for him. And within minutes, Jerry walked out of the restroom in prison wearing a very loose uniform with his hat down and his eyes forward. And the two were off on a trip to San Antonio to make all the wrongs in the world right. Chapter 49. I watched as my Lyft driver pulled off down the road and make that left at the corner, and I thought to myself how he had no idea what was about to happen to his last passenger and everybody else in my house. Outside the new home, nothing looked to be out of place. The gardeners had kept up their side of the deal and placed the trash cans out on the curb like I had asked. Tiffany, my neighbor, was putting her newborn Riley in his car and had waved hello as she strapped herself in the seat. I usually shied away from her talks of neighborhood drama, but at that moment, I wished I'd had the liberty to go over there, talk, have some tea, maybe even let her bore me to death about her feuds with other soccer moms. I wanted to do anything else in the world but go into that house and face Jerry. But of all those days, she didn't ask anything of me. And when I looked back at my house after I waved to her with my luggage to my side, I saw Boston peeking through my living room blinds at me with a smirk on her face. Then she disappeared. I entered my front door, then closed it, locking every lock like I was instructed. And not even 20 feet away from me was Boston standing there in the same black dress I had saw her in from the night before. But this time, she frightened me with a huge, almost hysterical fake smile. "Honey," Boston shouted, "Sarah's home. Coming," I heard Jerry Jr. say from somewhere in the back of the house. Boston never took her eyes off me as she walked towards me with her hands and arms open, readying for an embrace. "Baby," Jerry said, excited, as he appeared from my basement door under the staircase. Boston hugged me tight while my luggage was still in my hand. Then, with her lips near my ear, she whispered, "Jerry's mine, bitch. You nor anybody else is gonna take him away from me." She pulled back from me as Jerry passed her to approach me. Jerry gave me a deep squeeze, hugging, a deep squeezing hug, and dug his face into my hair, taking a slow, deep breath. "I'm so glad you made it on time." I looked at Boston, still in shock of the whole matter, and her smile had shifted to a flat, deaf stare. Then she smiled again as Jerry pulled back. "Please sit," Jerry gestured to my dining room table. "Where's Mark?" I said. "Oh, don't worry about that. We'll get to him after breakfast." Jerry looked at my luggage. "Oh my gosh, where are my manners? Boston, please take Sarah's things and put it in the closet and then serve our..." I interrupted him. "I don't want to fucking eat, Jerry. Where is my husband?" Jerry's face was animated like a robot from the Stepford Wives movie. He ignored my question. "Doesn't it smell great in here?" Jerry said and took another deep breath. "I don't know if you knew this, but Boston is a great cook." Boston took my things with the same look of discontent and put them away before walking through the back hallway into my kitchen. "Sit, sit," Jerry said. "We have so much to catch up on before we get started." Jerry took my hand and sat me down at the dining room table. Then he pulled out his handcuffs and chained my ankles to the chair. "Sorry about this," he said. "You're a sneaky one. I can't have you getting away from me again." Jerry sat to the right of me and began to talk as if we were two friends sitting at Starbucks. "So, there are so many things I've been wanting to say to you over the years. And don't worry, I'm not mad at you for not writing back. I forgive you." Jerry looked at me up and down in awe. "Wait, gosh, have I told you how beautiful you are?" "Jerry," I said. "Yes. Where's Mark?" "Really?" "Yes, really. I really don't know why he's of so much concern to you. I already told you he's here." "Can I see him, please?" This seemed to mildly annoy Jerry. "Fine. Boston, can you get our guests, please, and bring them up?" "Yes, honey," Boston said from the kitchen. Jerry turned his attention back to me. "Them," I thought. "Who else is down there?" "Now," Jerry continued, "I have some big plans for us. I figured we'd have to move out of the country, considering my current status here. Canada or Mexico? I'm thinking Mexico, though, because it's a shorter distance. Plus, I'm a Texan through and through. I don't do well in the cold. Then we can get married, have some little cherries running around. Of course, I'd have to figure out how to make some money for our growing family, but where there's a will, there's a way. Jerry continued his crazy tirade, but I stopped paying attention when I heard the same type of chains I was locked in slumping up the basement stairs. I can hear Boston barking orders at them, but I couldn't listen well over Jerry's constant jabbering. "Breakfast is served," Boston said as she opened the kitchen door, and to my horror, Mark walked in with the plate in his hand and his face was half burned off. Chapter 50. "Mark!" I yelled, and I tried to stand, but I couldn't. I started to cry. The right side of his face was at least second degree burned, and his hair was burned so that I could see his bleeding scalp and skull. He had been beaten to a pulp, and he looked to be in utter pain and despair. "You motherfucker!" I grabbed Jerry's wrist, but he pulled away with ease. "Now, now, Sarah, settle down. Mark is fine, aren't you, Mark?" "Yes, sir," Mark mumbled from the side of his mouth, which he was drooling. Jerry smiled. "See? Perfect gentleman." My mother came in after. My mother came in after Mark, and I almost fainted. She was chained the same way Mark in her. She was chained the same way Mark was, and her cheek looked as if someone shoved the grapefruit in her mouth, and both of her eyes were blackened. "Mom!" I cried. "Mom is fine too, Sarah. Don't worry. I told you," Jerry said. I couldn't stop staring at him, thinking that all of this was my fault. They placed our plates in front of us, and before Boston escorted them out, Mark gave me one last look from his almost closed eye. "Chain them back up, Boston. And oh, Mark, don't try anything funny down there, please. I wouldn't want to have to crush your pretty little wife's face into pieces. Thank you." I put my head in my hands and wept like a baby as Jerry continued his fantasy of our future together, our future life together. I've never prayed a day in my life up to that point, but I couldn't help myself. I prayed that I would be the one to kill Jerry. I didn't care if I went to jail for the rest of my life for it. I'd welcome it for what he had done to them. And in the midst of all of my prayers, I was interrupted by the devil himself. "I know it's hard, Sarah," Jerry said, "but look. Look on the bright side, huh? Soon your debt will be paid in full, and we can go and live the rest of our days happy, healthy, and whole together." "What the fuck are you talking about, psycho?" I screamed. "Oh, I forgot. I was so excited to see you that I didn't even mention it. Mark and your family have agreed to sacrifice their lives for you. Isn't that great?" "What?" I exclaimed. "Yes. Look. As you know, I've thought about this for quite some time. And as you can imagine, I feel like the only way you and I can truly move forward in our relationship and being totally in love without resentment from the past and blah, 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 is for me to take away from you what you already took away from me. So today, you, just like I had to do all those years ago, helpless on the side of the road, are going to witness the execution of your whole family." And boom! Man, that is it for today's episode of God Bless the Girls. I think that's 47, 48, 49, 50. It's getting pretty fucking crazy, isn't it, guys? Oh my gosh, this guy Gore has found out a way to do it again, man. Well, I'm glad you guys are listening to it, and it's getting pretty good. We're getting towards that ending part, so we got to head off with a freaking banger. And believe it or not, it even gets deeper than this. I'm really proud of myself on this writing and stuff like that. We're getting good at this stuff, and feels good, man. Feels good to write it, feels good to listen to it, feels good to hear it. So I'm not going to stay in your hair too long today. But I will be back again next week with another episode of God Bless the Girls on Dialogue Heavy Podcast. And I'll see you then. Thanks again for listening to all the people that we got out there that is listening weekly. I appreciate you all for this. And I love you for it, man. If you got any more questions and stuff like that, you can always hit me on Instagram at Michael DeGrio. And then also on my email, mzzack199@gmail.com. So you know how to get to me. You know how to get a hold of me, man. I thank you. I love you. I appreciate you. And we'll see you next week. Peace. I'm out of here.